Should President Obama approve or reject the proposed Keystone XL pipeline? We'll get two perspectives this hour and welcome your questions and your views, too. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 4th. The State Department on Friday issued a report that said the project, which would ship oil from Canada to Texas Gulf Coast refineries, would have a negligible impact on climate change, prompting supporters to urge President Obama to greenlight the pipeline and opponents to hold protest vigils in hundreds of cities nationwide last night, including here in Wisconsin. What's your biggest reason for supporting or opposing the Keystone XL pipeline? Or what questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will hear first for this first half hour from a guest who will make the case for the pipeline, and after 7:30 from a guest who is opposed to it. Our first guest is Nick Loris, policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation's Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies. He focuses on energy, environment, and regulation issues. Good morning.
Good morning.
Describe for us the Keystone XL pipeline project. What is this exactly? And why do we need
it? Well, it's a 1,700-mile-long pipeline that would go from the Canadian tar sands oil in Alberta, Canada, down to our Gulf Coast refineries, bringing 830,000 barrels of oil per day down to those refineries. And so given the fact that the State Department has concluded that this project would pose no significant environmental risk, we think that it should be approved. We think that the State Department's first environmental review was conclusion enough that it didn't pose significant environmental risk or wouldn't contribute significantly to climate change. And so we think it should move forward.
Yeah, well, so what? Why should it move forward? Why do we need this?
Well, if you look at the economic value it will create, you know, there's thousands of construction jobs, and while those will only be temporary, there's only going to be about 35 to 50 permanent jobs. You have to look at the oil it will bring in and, you know, just the economic value it'll create. It'll create billions of dollars in property tax revenue. And, you know, in a world where we have increasing demand for oil, both in the United States and globally, you know, increasing supply can help drive down those prices or at least keep them stable so supply is meeting up with demand.
Yeah. So what's your reaction to the environmentalists and other groups that staged hundreds of protests nationwide last night? They're still very concerned that there's a environmental risk to this pipeline.
Yeah, and I think this really is a lightning rod issue for the climate change debate at large, and for those who believe climate change is heading towards a catastrophe, you know, this is a significant issue for them because of this Canadian tar sands oil that is more greenhouse gas intense, although the wells-to-wheels emissions from bringing oil down from the Keystone XL pipeline would be about 17% more, given the fact that when you look at it in terms of global greenhouse gas emissions, it's pretty negligible, and that's what the Department of State found. So I understand their concern when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions, but if you look at it, this one project, it's not going to have very much of an impact on climate. I mean, climatologists have looked at this and have used a climate model emulator developed by the Environmental Protection Agency and worked it out to be about less than 1/100,000th of a degree per year for when this pipeline is in operation.
Isn't there any risk, though, that you know, a pipeline like this could break or leak? How do we know something like that wouldn't happen?
Well, we don't, and we've seen pipeline spills in the United States in the past. That being said, that pipelines are the safest and most economical and environmental favorable way to transport oil and petroleum projects. And you know, this is going to be a state-of-the-art pipeline. It's met 57 specific design and construction conditions from the Department of State and Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration, and it's going to be equipped with 10,000 sensors that will monitor its pressure to hopefully detect any leaks before they actually occur, or any type of differences in monitoring the flow of the pipeline and the flow of the oil in the pipeline. So, you know, you can't guarantee that it's never going to spill or never going to cause a leak, but the fact that they've done their homework and you've had, you know, over 100 people working on the environmental impact statement, including geologists, anthropologists, climatologists, and coming to the conclusion that this would not pose a significant risk, I think is a positive step in granting the green light for the construction of the northern route.
So do you think President Obama is going to approve this project?
That's a great question. I don't know, and I don't like making predictions. I think he will, because he said in his climate change speech back in July that he would make the decision, based on whether this would significantly contribute to climate change, and the Department of State's environmental impact statement said that it wouldn't. And so now we go through a 90-day period where other agencies are going to weigh in, as well as a 30-day public comment period. So, you know, hopefully, you know, when all that information comes back, the report will still stand, which I believe that it should, and I think President should approve the pipeline.
What do you make of the opponents' concerns that the State Department study had input from the developers of the pipeline?
Yeah, and we're seeing an investigative report right now through the Department of State's Inspector General, and I think, you know, we certainly should wait for that information to come about. I don't think, you know, the Department of State has said they've already vetted this for any type of conflict of interest, and the fact that you've had this third party working on the environmental review isn't anything new. You know, they're the ones who have the comparative expertise to assess the environmental risks of the pipeline. And, you know, the Department of State, in its environmental impact statement, in the final environmental impact statement, they list everybody who's worked on the environmental assessment. So I don't think they're trying to hide anything. I think they're trying to find the people with the best expertise. And, you know, I don't think there will be any conflict of interest, but at the same time, you know, we should wait for the Inspector General report affirm or deny that assessment.
Our guest is Nick Loris, a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation's Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies. He focuses on energy, environment, and regulation issues, and he is with us to make the case for the Keystone XL oil pipeline. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your views on this. Do you want President Obama to okay the pipeline or reject it? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about whether or not President Obama should approve or reject the Keystone XL pipeline and why. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Environmental groups rallied last night to urge President Obama to reject the pipeline. Meanwhile, supporters say he should approve the project after a recent State Department report showed that the pipeline's environmental impact would be minimal. We are talking with a supporter of the pipeline during this half hour. We'll get a different perspective after 7:30. Nick Loris is with us now. He is with the Heritage Foundation. And our first caller is Mary in La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I'm so glad you're having this program today. I've been waiting for it. My question is there any other option? I live along the Mississippi River, and the trains go by with the oil, and I'm concerned about that. Yet I'm from the part of the nation where the pipeline would go through, and I've really been agonizing. So my question is building a refinery in Canada out of the question? I realize that would take many, many years to do, and maybe the oil will be all gone by then. I'm leaning toward the pipeline because I don't like to see all of these cars going by with the oil along the river here, but yet I'm also concerned about the area that the pipelines would be going through.
Yeah. Well, why not build refineries closer to the oil, Nick Loris?
I think that will happen in time, but as the caller mentioned, and that's a great question, you know, it takes time and much more money to build a refinery, not to mention getting it through all of the environmental review and permitting processes. So, you know, when you're talking about a $5 billion pipeline versus a $10 to $12 billion refinery that will take more than a few years to construct, a pipeline looks like a better and quicker option. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive either. I think you could see, both where, we're constructing the northern route of the pipeline while it makes sense to build a refinery. But the problem is you still have to ship that refined product somewhere as well. So in a sense, you're almost in the same boat, whereas in, they're taking it to the Gulf Coast because those refineries are already set up and they have a process to ship those refined petroleum products either within the United States or to export them to other countries.
Thank you, Mary, for the call. Bill in Lancaster is with us. Hello, Bill.
Hi. There was actually... when he was talking about spills, I wanted to mention this. There was actually two spills in Wisconsin in the last couple of years, one up by Grand Marsh and one down by Jackson on the state-of-the-art pipeline. So spills definitely do happen, and the response is usually questionable. But what I wanted to talk about was a number of years ago, I watched a show on the tar sands on the History Channel, and one of the little tidbits of information they gave was this oil takes something like the equivalent of $180 a barrel to produce. So basically the Canadian government is just massively subsidizing this operation. So, I mean, we're looking at oil that takes some of the most efficient oil in the world to produce. And I guess, why do we want it?
Yeah. Nick Loris?
I haven't seen that figure, and I don't know if the Canadian government is subsidizing the development. I'm opposed to all energy subsidies, for renewables and for fossil fuels. At the same time, if there's private sector interest to develop this oil, even if it does cost more money, then I think they should be permitted to do so. But at the same time, I don't think we should be extracting oil for the sake of extracting oil either. So, as a policy analyst in the United States, I don't have much of a say as to what the Canadian government does, with respect to their natural resources. I wouldn't want that to happen here. I wouldn't want the, American federal government heavily subsidizing oil just for the sake of extracting it.
Ivy in Evansville is with us now. Hi, Ivy.
Hi. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but there was a pipeline rupture. It was an underground pipeline in Arkansas that caused oil to leach out into an entire neighborhood and pollute the groundwater. And these things don't, I haven't heard much about it. And Exxon's response to the homeowners and the people in the area was less than, they weren't very good to the people there. And I also think about the Yellowstone River, and I wonder, which do people think is more valuable, water or producing oil that is going to run out at some point and leave us with a pipeline and possibly contaminate our water? If you think of West Virginia, people couldn't drink their water. And this water is used to, much of it has been used as groundwater to irrigate our breadbasket.
Yeah. So Ivy says water is more important than oil. What do you say, Nick Loris?
Well, again, I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and yes, there are spills, and because we have over 2.5 million miles of underground pipelines in the United States, and more than 200,000 of that moves oil and other energy products, there are going to be accidents. I think that's inevitable, but what we need to do is ensure that we minimize the risk that we ensure that there's an efficient cleanup, and we hold these companies liable if there is a spill to make sure they do work with the communities to protect their groundwaters. And, one of the things in this environmental impact statement is that the Department of State looked at any potential migration of oil down to affect any groundwater sources, and they came to the conclusion that it's highly, highly unlikely because of the soil composition along the route of the pipeline. So, again, that's not to just dismiss the fact that oil spills happen with pipelines, but we need to create a system that minimizes the risk and holds these companies liable so any affected communities are taken care of.
Yeah, so Adam on Facebook says that he does not support this pipeline. Once the pipeline leaks, he says, and it gets into the Ogallala aquifer, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, it's all over. This aquifer is far too important to this country. You're saying the report says that's highly unlikely to happen.
The reports looked at that, and actually that was one of the reasons why this environmental impact statement was redone, is because the state of Nebraska specifically had a lot of concerns. And if you look at the Ogallala aquifer now, there's a spider web of pipelines that already run over it, and this certainly wouldn't be the first. And so this is something, again, that the Department of State has looked at in its final environmental impact statement, and you can look at the report and the details and how they had a lot of geologists make sure that there would be no significant risk to any aquifer like this.
Our next caller is Ross in Milwaukee. Hello, Ross.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Nick, quick question for you. I used to work up in the oil fields of North Dakota, so I'm quite familiar with the industry as a whole. What I've been told by people working in the industry is that the tar sands up in Canada are extremely dirty, and the refinery process for them is much more labor-intensive than with typical oil coming out of other areas. My question is, since we haven't built a new refinery since, I believe, the 1980s, and we've just been retrofitting the current refineries that we have, can they handle this dirty tar sand coming out of Canada? Or does it make sense to, yes, spend double the price to build a new refinery as opposed to keep using the current pipe or the current refineries?
Yeah. The Gulf Coast refineries can handle this type of crude. It has to go through kind of a cleaning process before it goes down to these refineries, or before it's even shipped through the pipeline. It has to go through a cleaning process, and then it's the same as kind of the heavy crude that we get from the Middle East and from Venezuela. There's some refineries there's one major refinery being built in North Dakota, and that's to handle that light sweet crude oil. So that refinery couldn't handle this heavy crude, but the Gulf Coast refineries can.
Thanks, Ross, for the call. Alex on Facebook says they will approve it. Right now, there is a shortage of welders, and when the other big jobs dry up, it will be approved. Canada is using the United States because we need the jobs. You mentioned, though, that initially there would be construction jobs, but really only a few dozen permanent jobs?
That's correct. The State Department says 42,000 direct and indirect jobs throughout the construction of the pipeline, anywhere from 4,000 to 10,000 direct construction jobs. We've already seen 4,000 construction jobs created when they built the southern half of the pipeline that didn't need the president's approval, but only about 35 to 50 permanent jobs, because you don't need very many employees to operate a pipeline. And I think that's a plus. It means that they're efficient and that they have a high productivity of labor compared to other methods of transporting oil. So I think that means they're more likely to create wealth and free up resources to do more productive things elsewhere in the economy.
Chris in Manitowoc. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. I was just wondering, the economic benefit doesn't seem to be that great for the United States. As you mentioned, the jobs are minuscule, really, in comparison to the economy. And the oil is owned by Canada. So I'm not sure where the benefit is. I'm sure there's some benefit in the refinery process. But isn't this more of a geopolitical issue because Canada was offering to sell this oil to China?
Right.
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think it hurts to have 830,000 barrels of oil coming in per day from a secure and important trading partner in Canada. As you mentioned, there's going to be a lot of benefits for the refineries. You know, this will increase their profit margin compared to some of the oil they're refining from Venezuela and the Middle East, not to mention the billions of dollars in property tax revenue through which the pipeline runs through. And even though we're going to be exporting some of this refined petroleum, which, you know, people are concerned about, you know, that might change. You know, the economics may change, you know, as our country, you know, recovers from this long economic slump. You know, we might be demanding and using more gasoline, in which it will make more economic sense to keep it here at home. So I think there's plenty of economic benefits. And because of this fact that the State Department concludes that there's minimal environmental risk, to me, that's why the president should approve the project.
Less than 30 seconds. When do you expect a decision?
Well, again, it goes through about a three-month comment period where eight different federal agencies will look into it. And to me, I wouldn't be surprised if he puts it off until after the 2014 elections, especially because there's a lot of moderate Democrats up for re-election who are in support of the pipeline. So one way or another, he's got some wiggle room and he's got some time to make a decision.
Thank you so much for being with us. Nick Loris is a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation's Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies. We will get a different perspective on the Keystone Pipeline coming up after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. In our last half hour, we heard from a guest who supports the proposed Keystone XL Pipeline, a 1,700-mile pipeline that would transport oil from Canada to Gulf Coast refineries. Now we will hear from a guest who does not support the pipeline. And we'll continue to take your questions and your views. Do you want President Obama to accept or reject this project? Now that a State Department report issued on Friday says it would have minimal impact on the environment and climate change. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio at 7:37 on this Tuesday, February 4th. Our next guest is Bill Snape. He is a senior counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. He coordinates the legal and policy work on endangered species, wilderness, and energy. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, so why do you want President Obama to reject the Keystone Pipeline?
There's really no need for this pipeline is really one of the bottom lines. It would do all sorts of injury to our climate and to the land that it would transect. It just doesn't make sense on any level. And really, the best argument for the Keystone Pipeline, the economic benefits, the supposed economic benefits, are so temporary, so transient, and are offset by so many other costs that really this is the definition of a boondoggle.
Well, what about this State Department report that says that the environmental impact would be minimal and negligible when it comes to climate change?
Well, you know, if you take a close look at the EIS, which I have done, it actually doesn't say that. It gives a very mixed report on the impacts on the environment. It does make some conclusions in larger context, but for instance, it says this project will be like adding 5.7 million cars to the road. Now, think about that. 5.7 million cars. That's not all the cars in the United States, but that's a heck of a lot of cars. And we've got to start somewhere on climate change. We have to start somewhere on these greenhouse air pollutants. 5.7 million cars is a lot. We need to say no to this dirty tar sands oil project.
Well, how can the report use the word negligible, then, if they say it's going to be adding the emissions of 5.7 million cars?
Well, that's a great question, and I think my political analysis to that question is, I think the State Department drafters, now supposedly John Kerry was not a part of this process. He becomes a part of the process now as they approach the record of decision over the course of the next 30 to 60 days. But the people who wrote this document clearly wanted to give the president an opportunity to say yes or no. This document allows him to go either way at this point.
Yeah. Our last guest said that noted that there was an investigation going on as to whether everything was on the up and up with this State Department report. And he says wait for that investigation, but then sees no reason to not approve this pipeline. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, the investigation should be finished before we make a final decision on this. And the bottom line is on that, that you had a consultant who's a member of the American Petroleum Institute writing the environmental impact statement. So maybe they put in the word negligible.
Well, what do you expect to happen? Do you think President Obama will approve this or not?
You know, I honestly don't know. You know what? I hope he does. I think when all is said and done, he'll probably say no. But I think that he's just under great pressure from the fossil fuel industry in the United States. In fact, in North America, because this is a North America issue, obviously, with the economic and energy interconnections. He has not said no yet to the oil gas industry. Believe it or not, despite the Republican rhetoric in Congress, the president has been quite good to the oil and gas industry in this country. So, you know, I'm just a little bit skeptical. But I think on Keystone, there's such a massive outrage and disapproval of this project. I mean, just thousands of people are continually showing up to rallies to say no to this project. I mean, the energy and the verve is unbelievable. I just don't see how he says yes and not suffer a pretty major political blow.
We had a number of callers in our previous segment who were concerned about water and the aquifer and saying that that possibly if there was a break or a leak that this was going to be disastrous. But our guest from the Heritage Foundation said that this report, the State Department report, said that it was very, very unlikely that some sort of leak was going to be a disaster. Certainly there's a possibility of leaks, but the way the soil is, it's not going to destroy aquifers.
Well, I think that goes, again, to the schizophrenia of the actual environmental impact statement document. If you look at some Nebraska state documents on water and you reach conclusions and you see conclusions that are just the opposite. There's been a lot of independent science that has raised some very grave concerns about impact to water quality and water impacts. And remember, you know, we've heard before that pipelines don't spill. Well, pipelines do spill. We've heard that rail isn't a big deal. We've seen some massive rail accidents. I mean, the reality is when you move oil and gas, accidents occur and things get polluted. So, you know, I think that's just a battle of competing rhetoric there.
Is there anything that could make you support this project?
No, it's a stupid project. And it's a stupid project, harsh words, I realize, because it doesn't make any economic sense. I mean, it really is an unmitigated environmental disaster. I mean, that almost goes without saying. But the economics, which is really, you know, what the proponents tout, just they don't really add up. It's a short-term injection of a drug. It is not a long-term solution. And in fact, much of this oil is going to be exported out of the United States in the first place, so that the oil and transport companies, including investments by the Koch brothers, can make huge amounts of profits. It's really a project that benefits a very small few number of Americans.
So even if President Obama rejects the pipeline, what's stopping the oil from being shipped via trucks or rail and the risks that might pose?
That's a very good question. The economic studies that have come out on that indicate that that's just not very economically viable. That's why they want the pipeline. And in terms of pipelines being built through Canada, British Columbia doesn't want the pipeline. So really, you know, and this is actually the larger context I was mentioning a few minutes ago, what's really going on is that I think on a diplomatic level, the Canadian government has been pressuring the Obama administration because the oil industry in Alberta is having a hard time. They're having a very hard time finding a market for this, and there are some oil companies that are hurting there because of that situation. And I think there's diplomatic pressure being put on the president to make a deal, a NAFTA-like deal on this. I think that's really one of the unspoken pressure points in this whole debate.
Help me understand that more. Why does Canada have to have a pipeline going through the United States?
Well, they claim to make a profit. They need to get this oil out of their country. They don't have enough demand for it in Canada. So they want it to be go to the United States. Houston's a great export terminal for all sorts, and is a massive export terminal for all sorts of fossil fuel products. They want to get it to Houston, and if they can't do that, and of course they can't build a pipeline in Canada, they're just going to have to sit on this. And as I understand it, I've been reading the Financial Times on this. Everyone agrees that there will be some of the small-time companies that will go under in Canada if this oil can't move. But, you know, frankly, that's not our problem, that some Canadian oil companies can't sell some oil that shouldn't be burned in the first place.
Yeah. What about the concern someone posed last hour that this is also dirty oil, tar sands oil, that would be hard on U.S. refineries?
Yeah, well, that is true. In fact, it's too bad this is not a TV interview. I'm actually holding a piece of tar sands right now. I keep it in my desk drawer, and it really is among the dirtiest of all oils, which makes it even a bigger climate problem. It's why all the climate scientists say, look, you got to say no sometime and somewhere, and this is the time to do it. This project is big enough and dirty enough that if you really want to get a handle on climate change, you got to say no to this.
Yeah, and so what, sand makes it dirty? Why is it so dirty?
It is. It's just got a higher carbon content, higher polluting content.
Yeah, so what you're looking at is just sort of a sludgy-looking thing?
Exactly. It is literally tar sand sludge. I'm holding what looks like a piece of coal, and we burn it.
Wait, Cody in Oshkosh has a practical question. Hi, Cody.
Hi there. I guess one of my questions is, who is going to pay for this pipeline? The last guest from the Heritage Foundation said he doesn't like oil subsidies, but this sounds to me like this is going to be paid for by taxpayers. It's going to run to the Koch Brothers refinery. They have a refinery that processes the dirty tar sands oil, and they don't have another venue to get that oil from except Venezuela. So this is just a big giveaway to the 1% again.
I couldn't say it any better.
So who is paying for this?
Well, there are a number of different sources of funding. Some of it is private. Some of it is public. And, in fact, some of the authorizations and infrastructure issues are going to be paid for by governments, either the federal government or state governments. So it is a mixed funding project, but it is a subsidy very much in the sense that this could not happen without federal government approval.
We are talking about the proposed Keystone oil pipeline with a guest who says that it should not be approved by President Obama. Environmental groups and others rallied last night to urge President Obama to reject the proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline. Meanwhile, supporters, and we heard from one of them in our first half hour, say the president should approve the project after a recent report claimed the pipeline would have minimal environmental impact. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions. Do you think that the Keystone Pipeline should be approved or rejected, and why? What questions or concerns do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Bill Snape. He is a senior counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. He coordinates legal and policy work on endangered species, wilderness, and energy. Talking with him about the proposed Keystone Pipeline. He is making the case against the pipeline, the 1,700-mile pipeline that would bring oil from the Canadian tar sands to Gulf Coast refineries. And Amy on Facebook says, why does the pipeline have to go all the way to the Gulf when there are three functioning refineries near Billings, Montana? Do you know, Bill?
It's a very good question, and they realize that the answer is because the oil companies and the transport companies wouldn't realize as big a profit. They can move more oil out of the country through Houston.
Yeah. Let's go to Ron in Eau Claire. Hello, Ron.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Quick comment. I agree wholeheartedly with your first caller. You got the Koch brothers involved in this. So special interest groups are pushing the right that that's what they got to do instead of working on infrastructure where we could actually get something to benefit the whole country. But my question is, early on in the Keystone report, they said they could up their profits by about $4 billion, and gasoline could actually increase in price in the upper Midwest because, as your guest just stated, once you start pumping this out of the upper Midwest refineries and removing the glut, now you can have this supply-demand excuse for our gas prices in the upper Midwest. And I just wondered what your guest thought of that.
Yeah, again, the caller is correct. It's counterintuitive at first, but it is entirely true that if the tar economic studies have shown that if you move the tar sands the way the Cook Brothers oil companies are suggesting, that it would have the impact of having short-term and sometimes even medium to long-term gasoline price increases, particularly in the Midwest region.
Yeah. So where does this oil go if it is shipped to the Gulf Coast refineries once it's refined? What happens to it?
Well, I'm not sure the markets of that have all been certain, but I would almost guarantee you, I would bet you your favorite bottle of wine that a lot of it's going to go to China. That's really partly what's going on here, and they're just trying to find a way and place to do that. But I just don't think the United States ought to sacrifice its farmland and its cultural heart to export dirty oil to China.
Gary on Facebook says the oil sands project is one of the largest environmental cleanup efforts in history. Oil, being the second most abundant liquid on the planet, occasionally oozes up out of the earth, making it a real mess, such as the oil sands. Taking this fouled earth, extracting the oil, returning the cleaned earth to the ground, and transporting the oil to be used to benefit people is surely one of the kindest things that we could do for the earth and its inhabitants. What about that?
Where did that come from?
That's one of our listeners says that's the oil sands project, that it's doing a lot of good, and we might as well use this oil for even more good.
Well, I wish that person had called in. That really, with all due respect, is one of the silliest things I've ever heard. The reality is that taking that tar sands out of Alberta and the boreal forest, we haven't talked about this, is going to devastate the boreal forest. The boreal forest is North America's lungs. It absorbs an incredible amount of carbon in the atmosphere already. So, no, that the comment doesn't make any sense, and it's factually incorrect.
So Gary is stating an inaccuracy there.
It sounds to be based on an aspiration and a hope and has almost biblical overtones. I don't understand. It just doesn't. It's not factually true. You don't help the earth by burning fossil fuels.
Joanne in Sturgeon Bay is with us. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. It has already just done horrible things in Canada. People up there are complaining about it terribly. It's just destroyed. We just don't seem to know when to stop assaulting our planet. And the other thing is that this stuff is impossible practically to clean up. There were two spills. There was one in the south in that one town. The sludge, they just don't have something to clean it up. And there's a place in Michigan where there was a leak 4 years ago, and it's still not cleaned up. The news just loses interest in some of these smaller, quote-unquote, things. It's just a disaster.
Yeah, and Joanne, I see here, though, that you also are opposed because of the short-term employment.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's just being misrepresented. It's one of the. And then what's this business about getting away from fossil fuels? I mean, the whole thing is just a contradiction in terms.
Yeah. Well, you don't disagree, I don't think, Bill, with our caller?
No, I well put.
Well, talk a little bit more about it is short-term employment, but our previous guest said that 42,000 jobs, when you think of all of the the residual impact of the construction of this pipeline, even if it is short-term, that's 42,000 jobs.
No, 42,000 is a massively inflated number, and that is not correct. The State Department in its EIS said 50 jobs. An economic study after economics, those are permanent jobs, an economic study repeatedly have shown that renewable infrastructure provides far more long-term jobs than these short-term boom and bust. Look what's happening in North Dakota right now. You're having a boom and bust on fracking for natural gas there, which did provide a little bit of a short-term benefit, but now jobs are being lost. There's an increase in crime, an increase of all sorts of societal problems. It has not been all rosy in North Dakota, and this would just be that times 10. It would just be a far more acute issue if this pipeline were to be built.
Yeah, so what can you tell us about all these vigils last night? Did they take place without a hitch?
Yeah, they did, and they really sort of spontaneously grew in upwards of 50 cities across the United States. I was looking this morning on the Internet, and all sorts of rallies and news and pictures and people both having a good time but also making a point that say no to Keystone.
Yeah, it's
thousands and thousands of people.
Brendan in Milwaukee. Hi, Brendan.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to clarify some issues that were mentioned earlier. One caller said that it cost $180 per barrel of oil to justify tar sands. It's actually closer to $80 a barrel that needs for the justification of the production of tar sands oil, since it is a massive mining operation, and sadly that is what it is. That's concentrated along one of Canada's major rivers. And it isn't necessarily a sludge. It's actually a former oil field that basically was risen up to the surface of the earth and lost its volatile components.
Yeah, so Brendan, where do you stand on this then?
Well, I kind of look at the more global picture here. I don't know. Basically, most of us drive a car. We can't deny third world people from owning a vehicle. So it's difficult. It's difficult to compromise this because, I mean, you can't deny development to other countries since we've already become a developed country.
Yeah, we still need oil now, I think, is what Brendan's saying. Bill, what do you say to that?
Well, first of all, this has nothing to do with gasoline and cars, so let's just take that off the table. And in terms of the larger question, no, we don't need to give oil to everyone. No, not everyone needs oil. We should be getting people off oil, including the United States. Now, does that mean that we're going to go down to zero right away? No, of course not. But this developmental issue is false. It's all about enriching people and companies that will gouge a profit. We do not need to be exporting dirty fossil fuels to China. China is already mining massive amounts of coal in their own country and already importing other massive sources of fossil fuels from other countries, including the United States. So this is just a project, when you look at it, just makes no sense. Mm-hmm. No one's developmental rights are going to be taken away if we say no to this project.
30 seconds to go. Our last guest expected a decision to be delayed until after the 2014 elections, but expected the president to accept the project, to back the project. Your prediction?
My prediction is that the decision very well might wait until after the elections, and I predict ultimately the president's going to say no to Keystone.
Thank you so much for being with us. Bill Snape is senior counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.